Coming to you live from a room in a house, Bobby and Danny's Foul Movements with Bobby and Danny. Hosted by Bobby and Danny. And now, here's Bobby and Danny.
Vowel Movements, brought to you by RockShowUSA.com. You can find us at Podomatic. Nope, that's not right. You can find us at vowelmovements.podomatic.com or bobby-j.net/vowelmovements.html or go to our Facebook page.
Yeah, you can go to our Facebook page. See, now, Bobby, you've done all the technical stuff.
Yes.
And so I was feeling guilty about that. So I opened up a Gmail account, the Gmail. So we now we have an email.
And why don't you tell our listeners where they can get a hold of us at?
vowelmovementsradio@gmail.com.
And please feel free to email us.
Email us. Let us know.
We might write you back, but more importantly is if you email us, we will talk about you on our radio show.
Yeah, we've already when you mentioned the Facebook.
Yes.
I posted just a little bit on my new fancy smartphone here that I'm still learning how to use. I posted something asking for people to give us topics to talk about, and we've got a few already.
Excellent.
Including we've got two people wanting us to talk about kittens.
Okay.
Stomach ulcers.
Okay.
Quantum physics.
Well, I'm an expert in 2 out of 3.
Okay, and then one more. Tell the Bobby job story.
It's a funny story. So we'll get to all those things. What?
Joe McKinney.
Okay.
Joe Friday, known to by many of his friends. I call him Joe McKinney.
Mm-hmm.
Because his friends call him Joe Friday.
That's excellent. I
love
that.
So I call him Joe McKinney. he wants us to talk about kittens.
Okay.
Anna Joy wants us to talk about stomach ulcers or kittens. So we can talk about kittens with stomach ulcers.
Okay.
Stefan Britt, who earlier on our Facebook got into a little bit of a toe-to-toe with my friend Chris over our extra bonus show.
Yes.
On the supergroup of dead rock stars. And Stefan gave us some suggestions on who should have been, and it was more of a prog rock.
It was more of a prog rock and living list than living a list dead rock stars list.
And then Chris, my friend Chris, suggested Bon Scott being a better frontman.
You know, the fact is, for those who don't know, I did. Speaking of kittens, we have a kitten's paw coming in under the
door. So there you go. We're talking
door.
About kittens. The house is covered in kittens.
The house. My wife, Plum, and I have four cats in this house.
And your cats also have their own Facebook page.
They do.
You can look up...
Jordan Cats.
Jordan Cats. So look up Jordan Cats on Facebook and add them. They post lots of fun, interesting things.
They like using the keyboard. So... I think we're going to let this cat in the room. So
that could be fun. There you go.
I'm just going to... You talk for a minute. I'm going to bang around here.
All right. So while you're doing that, I can tell the story that I want to make sure to mention before I forget. So I'm at work, and one of my coworkers... of course, as soon as you open the door, the cat just takes off. But anyway, like I was saying, one of my coworkers who works in the after-school program, and his name is Polo. And oddly enough, used to be a student of mine many years ago. But now he works in the school. Say hi, Pepper. Pepper the kitten is in the room. And so it's at the end of the day. My brain is completely fried. And Polo's, monitoring the yard, watching the kids, doing his job. And he's like, hey, Dan, that is correct.
You're kidding
and
me.
I'm looking at him. You know, end of the day, My brain is done. I'm not one of those teachers who's there till 7 o'clock correcting papers. And, you know, I'm going to run the science club. You know, I'll run a club if my boss tells me, okay, you need to do something else, Dan.
All right.
And so I'll do, but usually bell rings at 3 o'clock. I'm in my car at 3:02 and I'm heading out of there. And so my brain is completely done. And I'm like, what? He's like, that is correct. And he's looking at me like, you should get this, right? I'm like, what are you talking? That's correct. I'm like, oh, you listen to the radio show? He's like, yeah, it's great. I love it. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Paul. So Polo Adamo, awesome. St. Francis of Assisi Elementary School Extension Program employee, you are our listener of the week. So thank you, Polo. There you go, listener of the week.
Listener of the week. I didn't.
I know that you're doing all this stuff with the website, and you're doing all the technical and the footwork and all that stuff, and I'm just showing up and drinking your beer and talking for an hour. But if I may be so honored to name the first listener of the week, and can it be Polo Adamo?
It is Polo Adamo.
Polo Adamo. So thank you, Polo, for listening. I appreciate that. Another quick work story. I was being pretty self-centered and listening to our show during a recess break as I'm drinking coffee, catching up on some paperwork, and the kids are out in the yard. And for some reason, there's a group of seventh grade boys who like to come into my room and hang out and draw pictures of Tom Selleck on my dry erase board. My nephew being one of these seventh graders. And I was listening to an episode of Vowel Movements and just kind of, you know, not too loud, just low and in the background. And I happened to be mentioning sparse nipple hair. And for some reason, they didn't hear a single thing. But as soon as the words sparse nipple hair came on, they all stopped and listened to this. Is that you, Mr. Renoso? I'm like, oh, great. So now every time when I walk into the seventh grade to teach my algebra class, there's one kid who's like, hey, Mr. Renoso, how's that sparse nipple hair? I'm like, great. This is what this kid's going to remember me
for. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nah, whatevs. There's worse things, I guess. But those are my two job stories. So I think we should kick off when we're looking at the list of people mentioning things. Let's hear the Bobby Jobs story.
All right.
Is there any background, you know, information we need? Now, Stefan Britt, who you've known for how many years now?
I don't know, 15 years.
15
like
years.
Yeah.
And I
met Stefan. There was a record distributor in Woodland called Valley Records. I knew a ton of people that work there. You know, one of my best friends, Corey Vick, worked there.
Kepi Gooley also worked there.
At the time, Kepi was working there. And my friend Johnny from high school was working there. You know, and being from Woodland, it was a huge employer in town.
Yeah.
And really...
And you got to meet a lot of... And we'll get to the story, but you got to meet a lot of interesting people at Valley.
I did.
Valley. Who were some of the celebrities that would come through?
Oh, there was a ton. And I didn't go out and meet everyone. I mean, we're talking the biggest stars would come through there because at the time, Valley Records and then Valley Media was the biggest record distributor west of the Mississippi.
So, this is before digital downloads changed the face of music. Yeah. This is still when CDs, records, and even cassettes.
And cassette tapes.
That's how they measured who was a star.
And, you know, when it's the biggest distributor west of the Mississippi, so it behooved stars to come out and meet the sales staff because these are the people that are...
Now, I had no idea that you guys were the biggest one west of the Mississippi.
No, you say you guys, but I never worked there. So
there
were even record label reps that thought I worked there, but no, I never worked at Valley. I just knew a lot of people that worked at Valley. The singer Dave of my first the first band I was in, he worked there, and if you were at my birthday show, he came up and sang a few songs that night. But Dave worked there, like everyone I know worked there, and so I would go out there, and there were record label reps because I hung out with so many people that did work there. That kind of assumed I worked there, but I know I never worked there.
No, for the longest time, I always thought that at some point you worked at Valley.
Nope,
just because, you know, that was just always...
Well, when
you guys always talked about that Valley this, Valley that.
When I was in high school, I was on the swim team with the owner's son and my friend Johnny again. He was, you know, star swimmer. Johnny ended up getting a full ride scholarship to Cal.
Yeah.
An Olympic bound swimmer didn't make it to Olympics. Olympics are.
He was headed.
He was headed there.
He was good enough to.
Sure. And, you know, as an aside, Johnny was really good at a short course. Olympics is long course. So, you know, for whatever reason, he didn't make it to the Olympics, but he was on course to, you know, make the Olympics. So I worked with, I was on the swim team with him and the owner of Valley Media's son. And I applied out there, you know, for a high school job. You know, they had, even then it was smaller, but they still had a lot of employees. And I remember my friend Johnny saying, hey, talk to your dad. They haven't called Bobby back. And I'm like, no, no. And it's just funny because it turned into such a huge, huge deal. And so big, in fact, that, for instance, when Garth Brooks was on tour, like he'd play Sacramento and maybe play a couple nights in a row. He didn't have anything to do. He would either just sit on his tour bus or...
And this isn't Garth Brooks, you know, oh, playing at the El Dorado Saloon or whatever. No, it's Garth Brooks playing Arco Arena, sold out.
This is Garth Brooks being the biggest name in music. I mean, forget that it's country music. The biggest name in music in the early 90s.
Yeah.
He would go to Valley Records and just hang out. And I one funny story, I remember Kiss had... just come out with something, maybe the new, you know, Alive 3 or something, but there was some new Kiss record, and, you know, Garth just had his, you know, they let him have some office there just to hang out and for the day, and he was just hanging out and meeting sales staff, and Corey came in and said, oh, hey, I heard you're a big Kiss fan, I heard you're a big Kiss fan, I brought you this Kiss CD and a few other CDs to listen to. Well, I guess maybe later on, Garth Brooks' manager came up to Corey and said, man, thanks so much, because he doesn't have anything to do all day. All he does is just sit around and listen to music. You know, because at that time, he couldn't go anywhere. He's the biggest star in the world. So my point is, people like that came through Valley Records.
Yeah.
And I used to get to go out all the time. And I mean, two of the probably most notable people I got to meet were Megadeth, you know, when I was in high school. One of my favorite bands.
Yeah, that's,
you know?
That's a big deal for you.
So for me, it was a big deal. Uh-huh. But an even bigger deal... was when I got to meet Cheap Trick.
Wow.
And I had just painted one of my guitars, and it's the guitar that you have played and Tom has played in the knockoffs.
The sparkly...
Yeah, I did a silver and red sparkle.
What kind, that's a Gibson. What kind of Gibson is
it's
that?
It's like though? A... I don't even know what it is. It's, you know, some weird 70s thin-bodied Gibson Les Paul.
Yeah.
It has a Marauder. It's a Gibson Marauder.
Okay,
is what it
okay.
is. And so I had painted that, and I got
it's
it.
Silver glitter with red flames.
With red glitter
going
frames.
Up the side.
Oops, sorry.
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
So at the time, I had just got a drum set. And so I lived in downtown Woodland in a huge Victorian house. So my bedroom was kind of like two bedrooms. It was that big. Mm-hmm. And so in one half of my bedroom, I had my piano and a drum set. Like a couch and a TV, and I was learning how to play drums. And what I was doing was putting on the first three Cheap Trick records.
Mm-hmm.
So I just put it on my headphones, and I just try to play along, and that's how I was trying to learn how to play drums.
Yeah.
So anyway, to fast forward to, I got to meet Cheap Trick, and I go out there with my guitar, and so it's, you know, Rick Nielsen, Robin Zander, and Tom Peterson all in a row. Mm-hmm. Bonnie Carlos is on the end, the drummer. So, you know, I get... You know, first guy, you know, Rick Nielsen, oh, man, this is awesome. I'm like, oh, thanks. I painted it myself.
Yeah.
Wow, no way. You know, so cool. So he signs it, you know, same Robin Zander, Tom Peterson. Yeah. They're all freaking out on the guitar. They're able to sign it. Well, as I'm getting down to it, Bunny Carlos gets up and he leaves the table because I was one of the last people because, you know, I let all the employees go first. And then I just, you know, got in and I ran over to Bunny and I'm like, oh, you know, Bun, can I get you to sign this guitar? He's like, I'm sorry, I don't sign guitars. I'm like, damn it, I thought about bringing my snare drum. I'm learning how to play drums and I'm putting on your records. You're kind of like my teacher. And he's like, oh, well, I hope you're not playing to the first three records. And I'm like, I'm playing to the first three records exclusively. That's why I'm trying to play, learn how to play drums. And he just looked at me and smiled, grabbed my pen and said, this is only the second guitar I've ever signed in my life. And he signed the guitar.
No way.
He did. So,
wow.
You know, we all use that guitar, so the autographs are a bit faded. You know, Tom Peterson signed his, like, right where your arm goes, so there's only a faint trace. You know, I should have cleared over it, but...
Yeah.
So there's just a faint trace of some of the autographs on there.
Oh, man, I have a similar story. I had Dee Dee Ramone sign an acoustic guitar for me. He signed it right where your arm would go, and having a party at my house once, and my friend Steven... wanted to play every Ramone song he knew. And of course, half of Dee Dee Ramone's signature went off on his forearm. So now just it went, so I decided, well, instead of, I just took it off.
Took it off.
Just said, all right, and put a Ramone sticker on there. And I'm like, I can tell. At one point, I have a guitar with Dee Dee Ramone's signature. I have a guitar that has Sylvain and Cheetah Chrome signature on it when they came through with the Batuzzi.
Just recently. Wow.
Yeah. And
what,
it was great when Sylvain signs his autograph. He puts two Sharpies in his hands and just writes Sylvain. So
that
it comes out
funny.
Twice.
That's
it's
awesome.
It's pretty cool. And then, you know, having Cheetah Chrome grab my guitar, he's like, oh, what kind of guitar is it? You know, it's just a J. Tercer. I spent almost $100 for it. But no, he signed it, and it was awesome. So now I'm afraid to ever play those guitars.
I hear you.
That guitar now.
So anyway, that was the backstory.
Okay,
of Valley Records, which no one even needs to know or care about. So at any rate,
well, a lot of people that we were friends with, and I mean, here I am thinking, well, at some point you worked there, because I know it was based in Woodland.
Absolutely in Woodland.
Okay,
I had seen the Groovy Ghoulies. I had met Kepi. Mm-hmm. I think around that time is I started getting friendly with him. Him and Corey were friends. So, you know, we would maybe all go out to dinner. There was a couple times I went over to their house. They lived on G Street in Sacramento. And so we were all kind of getting, friendly. Mm-hmm. We'd go to Ghoulie shows all the time. And at the time, Kepi made the flyers.
Yeah.
Well, one day, and forgive me if I get this slightly wrong, but I think the story is a guy comes up to Corey and says, "Who makes these flyers for the Groovy Ghoulies? They're terrible." And Corey just said, "The singer of the band." He's like, "Well, I could do something better." Corey's like, "Yeah, okay, whatever." Well, and what he came back with was the Wolfman on a Motorcycle. And somewhere I still have that. And it was amazing because it looked like a real rock show poster, a 60s groovy, no pun intended, rock poster. Mm-hmm. It was so cool. And that was S. Britt, you know, that was Stefan. That was my introduction, and I saw it and I freaked out and I got one. And then eventually I was introduced to Stefan, and, you know, Stefan wasn't really my friend. He was Corey's friend and Kepi's friend, but I always had fun with him, you know, acerbic wit. And then at one point I moved to Sacramento, and I lived just a couple blocks away from him. And, I would go over to his house and, you know, stay there until like 3 a.m. with him playing prog rock records to me saying, "Oh, listen to this. This is Spirit. This is Randy California and his stepdad's the drummer." And, you know, he would just go on these tangents and play me these prog rock records. You know, prog isn't really my thing, but the fact that he was so into it, it made me kind of listen to it in a new light.
It's kind of the Dungeons and Dragons of rock and roll.
Not just kind of.
It is.
So, you know, and Stefan and I got to be friends independently of our other friends.
Okay.
You know, I've helped him, you know, move a couple times. He's now living in Portland. I did not help him move to Portland. Oh, well, but, you know, just one of my favorite people.
He was the artist behind all the...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Appetite for Adrenochrome from...
So not Appetite.
But yeah, not Appetite, but from that till...
He didn't do the second one either. That was Tim Foster.
Tim Foster did...
Back to the Garage.
Back to the Garage.
So every album, I think all the Lookout records.
Yeah, all the Lookout record ones. And then a bunch of singles, a bunch of shirts. Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's my introduction to this stuff. And so I don't even know how... Well, I know how, because I talk a lot and I tell a lot of stories. Which is one of the reasons, even though, like I've said before... I do not have a voice for radio. I have a thin, squeaky voice, and I talk in a very broken cadence with a lot of pauses, and that's correct, but doesn't...
But hey, I get recognized for the that's correct now.
Well, you do.
So there
that's
you go.
Right. So I had a catchphrase and I didn't even know.
And, you know,
it,
when
so.
you were shown, Bobby has the sketch of what will be the website, there's going to be a store. I'm already telling you right now, I'm going to go home and I'm going to make a screen, and we're going to silk screen. That's correct.
That's wow. Okay. So on a tangent, valmovements.net maybe in about a month or so will be up and running. So, you know, that's maybe optimistic or maybe not. Maybe it could be sooner. This whole backstory with me and Stefan has nothing to do with the story.
Okay. We haven't even started on the job story.
We haven't even started on the Bobby job story.
But now everyone's up to speed.
Up to speed with my relationship with Stefan, which is just us spending hours together, hanging out, telling stories from our childhood and just becoming friends. And, you know, he's a storyteller as well. You know, so we would just sit there and talk a lot. So the story is where I grew up in Oregon. Is in a little town called Brownsville, and there was a hill. There were houses on the hill, but it was a hill you could drive up, and then it had like a lookout where you could park and you could look out all over the Willamette Valley.
Okay,
we used to go up there and watch meteor showers. You know, a couple times a year. There's one, the Perseid, maybe that stars fall in the constellation Cassiopeia. That was a big
one. Is that close to quantum physics?
It's not. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, that's Sarah. That's Sarah Renee. That's the closest we're probably going to get to quantum physics in this hour.
And I probably mangled the name of that.
Yeah, it sounds good. It's all in delivery.
I think it's P-E-R-S-I-E-I-D.
The persimmons. Persimmons, I believe it is.
At any rate, we used to go up there with the family down the street.
Okay.
My friend Scott's mom. Well, Scott, of course, and his sister Kim, all four of us just go up there and watch these meteor showers.
Okay.
Well, I went up there with Scott's mom, Becky, and Scott's sister Kim, and we took spray cans. This lookout, you know, was a paved lookout, and you spray painted stuff on there. So, you know, Scott's mom spray painted Becky Loves Bill, you know, her husband. So what I decided to do was I was going to do my name in big balloon bubble letters. So I wrote B-O-B-B-Y. Huge. Right below it, I wrote J-O, and what should have been an R was right under the B, so I had a O under, you know, a J under the B, right?
Yeah.
For Bobby Jordan. I had an O under the O, right? Because
yeah.
The second letter is O, and the third letter should have been an R, but for some reason I wrote a B, so it said Bobby Job. And from that moment on, if I go to... And I sat there and I'm like, oh, man. So, you know, about a year ago, I haven't talked to Kim in years. And about a year ago, she found me on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And what she said was, Bobby Job, how are you? So, you know, 25 years later, Kim still calls me Bobby Job. And, you know, I told the story. Stefan laughed so hard that Stefan calls me Bobby Job. So there's two people in the world that call me Bobby Job.
And now there's going to be, I believe, nearly 78 people.
78 people
who may be referring to you as Bobby Job.
Maybe.
So,
But, you know, I have to say that just because we only have 78 friends, that's just the people on Facebook, you know.
Yeah.
We are well over 100 downloads on our podcast. So, you know, I think people are downloading it, listening to it without, you know, friending us on Facebook. But at any rate, that's the Bobby Job story. And with that, we're going to take our first commercial break.
All right, because we have two more topics
we do
to talk about from our Facebook, which we are at 78 people like us.
All right. And those 78 people, like we told you when it was 61 last week.
Yeah.
You guys need to hustle and help us out.
Tell people about us.
All you have to do is listen once and you want to keep coming back, right?
Yeah.
Okay, at any rate.
You're stuck.
We'll be right. We'll be back with some more shenanigans.
Yeah.
So, Dan, I was searching the Podomatic site the other night.
Podomatic, what the hell is that?
Podomatic.com. It's where our podcast is hosted.
Oh!
I found another podcast hosted there.
Really?
Brown Cock.
That's offensive, Bobby.
No, it's just two guys' names. It's Jazz Brown and Craig Hancock together for Brown Cock.
But do people realize that when you put a portion of their names together, what mental image that brings?
No.
Brown Cock. Think about it. When I say the words brown cock, what do you think of?
A cross between a brown trout and a rooster?
Brown cock.
Hey, Dan, we've been doing these ads. Who else should we do an ad for?
I think Google. They can use the help. Go to google.com for all your search engine needs.
That's google.com.
Back to the basement with me. Back to the to the second floor of Jordan Manor here. Two guys in a room, two microphones, more than two beers in each of our systems. But welcome back to Vowel Movements. I am Danny, and sitting across from me is my friend Bobby.
I'm here too.
And we just heard, and you can call him Bobby Job.
You cannot.
You cannot call him Bobby Job. You have no right to. So like I said, we got a few more topics to talk about from the Vowel Movements page. And so we'll just take it step by step here. Did we talk about kittens?
I did chase Pepper around.
Okay, so we did talk about kittens. Stomach ulcers. I'm sure I'll have many in my life with the amount of coffee I drink. Quantum physics. You mentioned stars at some point.
That's close enough, right?
Yeah, I love the show Quantum Leap.
I love anything that has to do with time travel.
Yeah, so there you go. There you go, Sarah. One of the Sarahs. We played a show in San Diego last summer.
Excuse me.
On tour with Bastards of Young, and there were these two girls there, and they came to the show. They're hanging out with us, and I asked them, what's your name, Sarah? And I told them, my niece is named Sarah, so yada yada. And then they went to go talk to Paul for the rest of the night. I think after that, they are, okay, he's the boring one.
Oh, yeah. You don't say.
You don't all say. Right. Yeah. Wow, niece. Very, very good. Niece talk. Very good. We're out of here. No, but actually, they're very fun. They're a lot of fun. They're really nice girls. We've got first album or cassette owned. Now, when you buy a book and it comes with a record, does that count?
Of course it does.
All right. Popeye's A Whale of a Tale.
All right. Was it a 45 or
was it a 45?
It wasn't a.
It wasn't a flexi disc. It was an actual 45.
Now was
Popeye's
that
a whale of a tale?
Okay. Well, let's
whale tale.
Let's quickly. God. So I'm having a tough time. So I will assume that someone got that for you.
It was a typical, Saturday, load everyone up in the station wagon, go to Kmart. we were poor. Go run off into the, toy section, go over there with my brothers and sister. And then, I saw a Popeye book. Oh, I want it for some reason. I wanted it. And, they bought it for me and it had a record in it. I had no idea I had a record in it, but, that was it. That was my first record. And then my first music record was the Beatles Rock and Roll Music Volume 1. I got that when I was, I think, in the fifth grade.
Okay.
And that was my first record. I got it just to hear the song Twist and Shout.
So is that the first record that you bought with your own money?
First record I bought with my own money was, it was in the fifth grade. I saw there was some TV special and they were talking about the 100 greatest rock and roll acts of all time. This is... God, in the late 70s.
Sure.
Probably like 70s. If I was in fifth grade, no, I was a little later. Anyway, regardless, I just remember seeing they were showing the Beatles playing at Shea Stadium and showing them singing Twist and Shout. And for some reason, it was just like the first time I heard music that just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Awesome.
And that is just hearing John Lennon's voice. It just blew me away. I mean, I've, heard about the Beatles and all that, but that was the first band that I was like, oh my God, this is great. And, my brothers would always go to Tower Records and they dragged me along and I looked for that record and I looked for a record that had Twist and Shout on it. And so that was my first music record. How about you? First record.
So the first record I ever got, my mom bought me because I loved the song. Was Eric Clapton doing I Shot the Sheriff.
Wow.
Bob Marley's I Shot the Sheriff. So that was my first single.
Mm-hmm.
The first record I ever bought with my own money. I was probably 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought Kiss Destroyer.
Awesome. Awesome. If you could share a stage with anyone alive or dead, who would it be? Would we be playing music? I'm assuming we would be playing music.
I'm an actor!
Acting! Genius. So I'm assuming music.
I'll assume music, but stage is stage, so it can be whatever we want. I did a play once. Mm-hmm. I decided that I thought I might fancy myself an actor. And a few years prior, I tried out for a play.
Mm-hmm.
And the director wanted to cast me in the lead.
Okay.
And one by one, I saw all these people leaving. He kept throwing me curveballs, and I'd be so mad because everyone did the same scene. And then I'd get up there, and he'd say, "No, I want you to do this scene." And I'd be so mad, but then it ended up, you know, as it went down, I was the last one. And I showed up, and there was a new actor there. And, you know, because that was still casting call. And he had me come in, and I did my thing, and he brought me into his office, and he said, "This play is too important for me to give it to someone that's never acted before. I want to give it to you, but I had to bring in my own actor." And so it made me, I left feeling good. Like, yeah. And he invited me, you know, free of charge, I could start taking his acting workshop in Sacramento. I left feeling very good about it.
Yeah.
It was that night, I got a call from Allison asking me to be the bass player in Go National. So everything worked out. So
there you go.
You know, I went out of one.
So you're saying the person you'd like to share a stage with is Allison Seconds.
Well, I had a lot of fun being in a band with her. I was just telling how it could be acting. But a few years later, I did. I got a call to try out for a part, and I got the part. And I realized that acting was not my bag.
Oh, really? Okay. So any idea who you'd share a stage with? Still?
Oh.
I'm going to press this because I really want to know who you would share a stage with, living or dead.
I wonder if you have an answer.
Yeah, you can say, oh, one of the Ramones. That's a given. I'm going to say Buddy Holly.
Oh, living or dead.
Living or dead.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say Buddy Holly just because. I think that would be... he's an icon, but I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. He's not put up on the same pedestal as like the Elvis,
sure,
and Chuck Berry and whatnot. But I think Buddy Holly would be someone I would enjoy. If he doesn't say if you could only share the stage with one person, you know, but if you could share the stage with anyone, who would you want to share
well,
it with?
You know, I'd you would think it would, you know, maybe it should be. What, you know, Buddy Holly, I like that, you know, of course, Buddy Holly is not obscure,
yeah,
but I'd like to say that's an obscure enough one,
yeah,
that I champion that.
I think people who know me would assume, oh yeah, okay, Dee Dee Ramone, Joey Ramone, Johnny Ramone, we get it.
Sure.
There's a theme here. but no, I Buddy Holly or Little Richard.
Ooh, yeah.
I'd be afraid of Little Richard yelling at me though. For messing up. I mean, you know, James Brown would fine musicians if they messed up. He'd fine them $20 for every screw up on stage. So I'd be worried about Little Richard yelling at me.
Yeah,
same with like Jerry Lee Lewis. I'd be worried about them yelling. Buddy Holly, I don't think he'd yell at me. I think he'd just smile and just go on with it.
I have a feeling
like he would have a great attitude to be in a band with and just jam along with.
There's a few people I've went to see where I've thought I should be, and it's always the bass player, I think, because I'm most competent on bass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'm a very average guitar player, so what could I add to a band playing guitar? Not much. But there are certain bands I've seen over the years where I think, oh, I could really do something in that band as the bass player.
Mm-hmm.
So
I could switch the question. Go on, answer. I'm going to switch the question around on you then.
Well, now when you say share a stage, I'm going to assume you're not opening up for, you're actually playing in their band.
He doesn't specify.
But yeah, I mean, we're kind of talking about playing in the band, but
yeah.
I'd love to be Bob Mould's bass player.
Nice.
I've always thought I could.
Which
really
era?
Add, you know what? Any era. I'd play for him now.
Husker Du, Solo, Sugar.
Sugar. You know, of course, Husker Du was just a tad before my time. I mean, mm-hmm. I could have been into him. I was into metal, and they were that kind of weird crossover where they would be in metal magazines, mm-hmm. so I'd see them sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, they just look like the weird dudes with, you know, the bass player that had the funny-looking mustache. So I never paid them any attention. I didn't get into Husker Du until the year they broke up. So
okay.
In 88, I finally got into them, and then I just, you know, immersed myself in their back catalog. My point is, I started going and seeing Bob Mould solo. And then I went to see Sugar, of course, and thought mm-hmm. I should be the bass player in Sugar. You know, and then he went solo, and I get all of his solo records, and some of them are a little too dancey for me.
Okay.
But yeah.
And, you know, and Bob Mould at one time was employed by World Championship Wrestling.
He was a writer.
He was a writer for World
well,
Championship
see, and that's,
Wrestling.
So here's
I've always wondered which storylines he was responsible for.
I hope the good ones.
Yeah.
But if you know that era of WCW, there weren't many good ones.
No, none at all.
I was still watching all the time. But, yeah. You know, and that's the thing. I always thought, wow, he likes wrestling. I like wrestling. We could talk for hours.
Yeah.
He played on Hedwig and the Angry Inch soundtrack. He was a guitar player for that.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, so that's just little things like that.
So I was going to flip the question around when you were mentioning if you could share a stage with anyone. Which band would you want to kick the bassist out of the band so you could play bass in that band?
Okay, this is going to surprise you.
Hmm.
Because it's not a band that I have all of their records, and it's a band that... you know, you look out now and it's like, yeah, listening to them, you may as well be listening to Fall Out Boy or Green Day or, some bands that, like, why even bother? Like, get into something else.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The Foo Fighters. I think I would be the perfect bass player in Foo Fighters if I, you know, wore a wig or something. But
no, you don't need to wear. I think you should grow the mustache back out.
Okay. But, yeah, I really think I could be, a damn fine.
All right.
Bass
well, let's get the message to Dave Grohl.
Okay, and
Bobby Jordan is available.
And because it's Bobby and Danny's Vowel Movements, I have to ask you. How about you? Who do you think you could?
Who would I want to kick out their bassist and have you play the bass for them?
No. who could you replace to better the band?
Oh, who could I replace to better the band? Oh God, I don't know about that.
Okay, who do you want to replace? Who would you hope would go down with a broken ankle so you'd have to step in into their place?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I need to really think about it. Cause, I mean, drum wise, it's like who do I wish I was good enough to replace?
Sure.
I mean, man, that's tough. That's real. I want to be the fourth guy in Green Day. The one that they don't shine the spotlight on, you know, the one who's off in the side,
you know,
he's playing guitar, but they doesn't get any credit. You know, they don't even put him in the band photos. I want to be the fourth guy in Green Day.
That's a, because
then,
be
you know, I can
gig.
Be, I can tour, play these huge arena shows, and then I can walk around wherever I want
and still
after
have
the show.
Yeah.
No one's going to recognize me.
And the fact is it might bump the popularity of your band up just enough.
Yeah.
The curiosity that people would come out and see you. So like when you played, you would get, you know, at least a smattering more of people or whatever. So,
yeah. I'll take over the guitar duty for Kepi Ghoulie Electric. I'll kick Kepi off guitar and I'll play guitar for him.
Yeah, that'd work. I think you already did that once.
I did that once. No, I lost my job. He's the one who kicked me out. here's another. Tell us about old sack punk bands none of us young'uns would know about. That comes from a young Kyle Perkins, who's a loyal listener.
Well, Kyle, while I'm an old fart, you know, I was a metal kid, so I missed a lot of the punk stuff. You know, mm-hmm. people talk about, you know, Square Cools. I'm sorry, did I say that? Square Cools, mm-hmm. Tales of Terror. I missed all that stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
same here.
I got those records later. But, you know, really, I guess for me, it would start in the early 90s, which mm-hmm. was, you know, the Groovy Ghoulies, Moist, Trash Women. I guess that was Bay Area. Yeah. Troublemakers, Mummies, again, Bay Area.
My favorite, the first bands I would start to go see locally, I saw Gnar,
mm-hmm.
Gnar, Horny Mormons,
uh-huh. Flemings,
the Flemings. but I would say probably one of the most important old sack bands to me was the Lizards.
Lizards, uh-huh.
Lizards.
I was going to say Lizards.
The Lizards, I think if anyone who, if you're into Secretions at all, figure out a way to get a hold of some old Lizards material. That hands down one of the most influential bands as far as the way we play and the way, you know, the way we write songs and whatnot. So the Lizards were my favorite.
You know, it's funny about you saying that. When I was trying to think back going to those shows in the early 90s, and I went to punk shows in the late 80s, but I mm-hmm. wouldn't have known locals from, I didn't know who was local and who wasn't because mm-hmm. I was an outsider. I was going to these shows. I saw 7 Seconds a few times in the late 80s. So I saw other punk bands, you know, Verbal Abuse. But I think Verbal Abuse was, you know, East Coast. I saw Gangrene. I think they were East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking about, you know, when they first started having shows at Old Ironsides, when there wasn't a stage and, you know, you just played in the little breezeway. The Guild Theater.
Yeah.
I saw your old band, False Color Image, although I guess I wouldn't classify them as punk.
No,
I,
we weren't.
More pop,
we were. We was, or as Mickey would call it, foofy new wave.
I don't know about that.
I think he was upset that we didn't have, I didn't ask him to play bass in the band. I wanted to be in a band with my brother.
Nothing wrong
and
with
so,
that.
And so,
who else was in that band?
Jay Knox, our friend Jay Knox, my best friend from junior high school, Hector, played drums. And then my brother played bass. I wanted to play in a band with my brother, and that was a bad move. We didn't gel very well in being in a band. And I love my brother to death.
That's funny. I remember liking you guys, but you didn't, you know.
We butt heads. Sure. It was what was, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I look back fondly, and I'm just like, oh, that was fun. We had a lot of, you know, I would wear a dress and boots. And I always wore dresses on stage for some weird reason, and we'd throw out boxer shorts and cowboy hats and candy, and it was all about throwing things out. And
so a lot of gimmicks then.
Lots of gimmick. But, you know, I wanted to be in a band that sounded like the Ramones. Hector wanted to play drums in a band that sounded like Santana. Ruben wanted to play bass in a band that sounded like Rush. Jay wanted to play guitar in a band that sounded like They Might Be Giants. So you had, and this, it was just one of those cases where, like,
and the thing is that sometimes all those weird influences can come together and make something incredible.
It can. But then when it came down to recording, you know, I wanted bigger guitar sounds, you know, and I didn't want the bass to be flying all over the place. And I didn't want Ruben to play the bottom two bass strings at all. I'm like, no, stop playing those.
You wanted to walk over and just take those right off the
bass. I just wanted to clip them right off. I'm like, just play the top two strings. And I didn't want a drum fill.
Oh, I hear
I'm
you.
Like, just play, just keep a simple beat. Just keep it steady. Keep
and
it steady.
And how long?
A couple years. And we released
and you
it.
We recorded
a couple of times. We recorded a couple of times. One time was a big mistake. We recorded with this guy who did sound for us at some show. We would always play these weird shows. You know, some
like you do when you're young. And
yeah,
you
it's
know,
like, hey, I got us a
gig,
and you know, it's like the whole Spinal Tap thing where they're going to the Air Force Base.
Yes.
We played those kinds
of
shows, which were bizarre.
Why wouldn't you? You're just trying to get gigs.
Or someone said, hey, I'm starting up a new venue. You want to play? And it's this huge, huge warehouse with 300 seats, and we're playing for like our eight friends who came.
Yeah,
but nah, we didn't care. We got all into it, and you know, a few times it would work out, but the first time we recorded, it was this guy who did sound for us at one of these shows, and he said, oh yeah, I'll record you guys. I got a studio in my house. We'd never been into a studio before. We didn't know any better. It was just his living room. He had some mics set up, proceeded to get as stoned as humanly possible. And the mix that he gave us, the recording that he gave us, is if I really wanted a hi-hat track that bad, if the hi-hat was really moved me as that much, I would have loved this recording. It's just all, and you hear the music in the background. I'm like, can you bring the hi-hat down? He's like, oh no, I can't, man. It's the hi-hat is being mic'd as the same mic as recording the snare. So if I do that, you won't hear the snare. And I'm like, oh, great. For some reason, and a funny story, for some reason at the time, that was the only recording we had. And I remember giving it to Jerry Perry because I wanted to get us a show at Bojangles or Cattle Club at the time. And I gave it to him, and in a move that's probably even more embarrassing than finding your OCD in a bargain bin, Jerry Perry years later was having a yard sale. That cassette was there.
Did you buy it?
No. Jen Klein.
Oh, you're kidding me.
So Jen Klein has that cassette that I don't even have. I hated it just because it's just like 35 minutes of and some music in the background. And then we recorded at the Hangar now.
Sure.
And we recorded with Eric Broyhill.
Okay.
And we did a cassette. You know, and I think I found a box with like six of those cassettes. And you know, it was poppy, a horrible, horrible rap song. I mean, we're talking D.D. King.
Wow.
Bad.
Wow, I really want to, much like we did when we talked about Matt Eric's Bankers.
Oh, yeah, it makes
one,
yeah.
I want to play that in the background right now. But
it's
I
bad.
Don't have
well, I'll
any.
Find it. I'll bring you the cassette. It's pretty embarrassing. But there was a few that, like, you know, I tried to. I like I said, it was just four styles just clashing.
Sure.
And it could have worked. And I think live sometimes it worked because we had shtick and we joked around. We
I remember, you know, like I said, I'd see you guys. I liked
I had fun. I had fun, but it got to that point where, like, I really wanted to play in a punk band, you know. And at the time, you know, Secretions, we were together, but, like, we really weren't anything serious at the time. It was just like, okay, yeah, I didn't think, like, Secretions was gonna happen. And yeah, I still don't think Secretions is going to happen. But at the time I was like, oh no, this is, cause I wasn't writing songs for the Secretions. I was just playing drums. I wasn't writing songs at the time. At that time, Mickey was, doing all the business and the bookings and the songwriting. And it was just like, okay, I'm just playing drums in that band, but this is the one that I want to write songs for. And I want to do things with. And it's really, really hard to be in a band. And anyone who's been in a band, that's, you know, that's a given. It's the hardest thing. And being in a band with your brother is tough. I mean,
we
butt heads. We tried several different bands after that, and it just didn't work. And we get along so much better now that we don't play together. But no, and yeah, so False Color Image.
So that's the story of False Color
Image. That's the story of False Color Image. And I think if we had a reunion show,
yes,
there would probably be my brother's wife, my wife. I don't know if Jay Knox's wife will let him play, but I don't. I just don't know if he'll be allowed to be there. I don't know if Hector's touched the drums at all yet, but he and I keep in contact every now and then. Maybe Jen Klein will be there. Maybe.
I'd be there.
Yeah, you'd be there. I'd make you feel guilty if you weren't there. But it was a fun time. I was happy I did it, but it's one of those things that at the time. I just remember it being a constant struggle. It's like, no, I want to sound more like this. I want to sound more like this. And if I was more of a band Nazi, mm-hmm. just said, this is the way you're playing it.
You learn.
Yeah. But then they wouldn't have been happy. Sure. They wouldn't have been happy playing that kind of music. And it did. I'm glad it didn't turn into one of those bands where, like, we kept the same name and, you know, changed people out.
Sure.
It was what it was.
So, yeah. All right. With that, that's the story of False Color Image. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back for another 15 minutes of your life.
All right.
Stay tuned and we'll be back with more Bowel Movement. Love Vowel Movement?
Are you feeling exceptionally generous?
Then please visit our Amazon wish list at Amazon.com.
Just search for us at vowelmovementsradio@gmail.com.
We really need stuff.
Badly.
Hey, Sophie.
Hey, Violet.
I totally want to go out tonight. Where do you want to go?
I don't know. I want to go somewhere I can take my top off and maybe, you know, get a little wasted.
Me too. Where do you think every guy will buy us a drink?
Well, I hear the boys at Foster's Bar are so nice.
No kidding. And you know what? I swear I stay there all night and I get totally wasted.
It's always ladies' night at Foster's Bar.
4451 Pacific Street, Rockland, California. Movements. When we get the website up and running, we're going to have sections on it for each episode that'll tell you the songs we played.
Yeah,
you know, and we
maybe even links you can
go buy and get the website credit for.
There you go.
So we've talked a lot. The time is flying.
I feel like
by.
We haven't even started the show yet.
That's
though.
How I feel, honestly.
So, all right.
You know,
and so, you were saying that we were ranked. You sent me a text
on Podomatic.com, they have rankings, and we cracked the, what did I say, the top 200?
I think we were like number three something.
Okay, so that means we cracked the top 400. Yeah. But yeah, we, we're growing.
There
so,
you go.
You know, with each episode, we're growing.
So 78 strong.
78 strong.
Everyone who's ranked 400 and below, suck it.
And now I have to say that the rankings move quite a bit day to day.
Ah, well, it's okay.
But
we'll just stick with
the strong showing from Lawrence, Kansas, really kind of catapulted us up the rankings.
Yeah, so you were saying you were able to figure out that we had listeners in Lawrence, Kansas,
yep.
Portland.
Yep.
And where else did you say?
L.A.
Wow.
Sacramento, of course. Boston. There's listeners in Boston. Oddly, the Bay Area apparently does not want to listen to vowel movements. So that damn Bay Area.
Later for them. They're, we're too controversial. That's what it
is. Yeah. With all of our, with all of our non-swearing. Yeah, we're too controversial because we're a podcast that doesn't swear.
There you go.
Which, if you knew us in real life, you would know how much of a feat that was.
I'm surprised that, you know... I think, was there one episode where
there wasn't, when I went back to listen to it, there wasn't a swear word at all. I think I just assumed there must've been a swear word there because we would have said, you know, whatever at that time. But, because this is so conversational, I always expect, and I, you know, the thing is these are an hour long and I go back and listen to them, you know, cause I have to edit them and make sure the levels are right. And, you know, our recording equipment, I have to kind of do some stuff in post to get it to sound a little better. But I always assume I'm always listening for swear words just so I can beep them out. You know, not that it's going to be the end of the world, but, you know, that's one of our things we decided when we started this. Hey, let's act like we're on the radio. Let's try not to swear. So that's what we've been trying to do.
Yeah. And I remember right before we started episode one, you just said, hey, I want to keep it clean. Here's why. And I thought, well, that's a smart move. So that could be our shtick. We're the only podcast.
I think
that's profanity free.
You know what? I think when people see the promo for this, I think that's what it's going to say. The internet's only profane, profanity free podcast. So.
Safe enough for your children.
We're not safe enough for your children. Judging by the nipple hair.
Yes. Sparse nipple hair.
Sparse nipple hair.
Yeah. I'm surprised, you know, we've been talking for coming up on an hour and we haven't even mentioned what we were doing an hour ago.
Yeah, and again, we wait until the last 10 minutes of the show to even talk about this.
We might have to do like a special wrestling edition.
We might, but we'll talk a little bit. So we watched the Royal Rumble. We're giving you a little insight about when we record this. But yeah, we watched the Royal Rumble tonight.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good show.
I was really happy with it. Yeah. I was surprised they gave the women's match more than 5 minutes. I gave it an over or under, over 5 minutes, under 8 minutes, I believe.
And you were
just
correct,
a little
right?
over 5 minutes. I was surprised. I was a little disappointed because they were leading into, there's going to be another combatant in this match. And I was hoping it was a newly acquired talent was going to make their debut. Didn't turn out.
I was very excited.
But the end of that match was exciting. It was awesome that they let a female performer perform that maneuver.
Yes.
Could make a lot of the guys look bad.
So what happened was a wrestler named Eve performed what is known as a moonsault, which is you climb up, you know, face first up the turnbuckle. So your back is towards the ring and you launch yourself up and back. So you're basically doing a belly flop on your opponent.
Yeah.
I guess that would be the kind of the layman's way of explaining.
And she nailed it. It's a move that if you didn't know what you were doing, you could end up driving your knee into someone's face.
Which happens a lot.
I've seen a lot of the male wrestlers on TV and on independent wrestling shows perform it incorrectly, and they really injure the person they're in there with. And she nailed it. Did a great job. And Eve Torres, also one of my coworkers, used to date her.
You're kidding
when
me.
When he went to USC, he used to date Eve.
Wow.
He dated
a pro wrestling champion.
Yeah, pro wrestling champion. I'll have to tell him, hey, Mike, remember that girl you dated? She's a champion now.
Wow, that's awesome.
He looks back on that. He says he looks back. He's like, anytime I mention it, he's like, oh, that was a great week.
a week.
Yeah, well, that was a great week for him. Yeah,
all those fleeting weeks.
Yeah, I thought it was a great show. There was just only three matches, and then the big Royal Rumble match, and there was two huge surprises.
Yeah,
we're not spoiling anything because
by the time this will get up earliest by late tonight,
Booker T.
Tomorrow.
Coming back, that was awesome.
Got to perform all of his signature moves.
Yeah.
Just hearing his music, which, you know, we talked about wrestling music tonight and how bad entrance music is and just, you know, theme music for the shows. And the themes that I end up liking, you know, Ric Flair's is up there. I mean, that kind of goes without saying, the 2001 theme. But Booker T's is easily in my top five, if not maybe my favorite of all time. That is one of my favorite themes. I just think it is so great. And it's just so weird and odd.
Diesel coming back.
Diesel.
That was
jet black hair.
Jet black hair. Now, what were you saying? He was a... Because you kind of knew a little bit about this.
So you read a spoiler? Yeah, I hate reading spoilers. Mm-hmm. And I usually, before the pay-per-views, I won't even look at any of the wrestling sites because I don't want to know anything. But I just saw a headline said, Kevin Nash is in Boston. I'm like, God damn it. And so I just, you know, changed, signed off. I read an interview, you know, years ago with Kevin Nash, and they talked about WWE, and he said, nah, Vince will make me dye my hair black, and I hate doing that. Well, he dyed his hair black, and he was back tonight. So we'll see.
It's awesome. To me, it's awesome to hear those guys come out. And just the reception they get. And like, he was getting, you know,
reception.
As when Kevin Nash works in WWE, he was always Big Daddy Cool Diesel. There's a huge Diesel chant
that
after
was awesome.
He was eliminated and he's just walking
and
out.
And the crowd booed. Oh, they were so mad. Rey Mysterio is a very, popular wrestler.
Yeah.
He performed his signature move on Kevin Nash and got booed out of the building. People were very upset with that.
Surprise ending. Alberto Del Rio. I was surprised. Teasing a little bit of Santino Marella winning.
I have to say they got me. He was going to win.
And our wives were upset. They hated it. It's like, oh, this sucks. They didn't like Alberto Del Rio. Personally, I love Alberto Del Rio. Not just because he's Mil Máscaras' nephew, but I think like he has the potential to be a big deal.
I do. He is out of any of the new stars. He's my favorite. The only other person.
But you brought up a great point because although that place would have exploded, the Boston Garden would have exploded had Santino won the Battle Royal, you brought up a great point. They would have had to do a lot of work comedy character.
Sure.
To build up legitimacy, like, this guy can be champion. He can be the face of the company.
And what do you do? I mean, how do you reverse the comedy character? I mean,
because that's what made people fall in love with him.
Sure.
They didn't fall in love with this serious badass who can actually wrestle, which he can. You know, his old character in the OVW days, he was a Russian mixed martial artist fighter. You know, he was just unstoppable. And then, you know, he moves up to the next level and he's a comedy character. And so I think people, they'd like to see him win and they'd like to see him, you know, defeat someone soundly. But I think they'd get tired of that.
Well, sure.
They'd miss the unibrow falling on your face, air trumpet, Santino. And
yeah, I mean, you don't sell pay-per-views on a comedy character, unfortunately. So, I was really happy with the outcome.
Yeah.
I was really happy with the opening match, Edge versus Dolph Ziggler. You know,
Dolph Ziggler,
one of my favorite
I
new
think
characters.
He's the next Kurt Hennig. Next Kurt Hennig, Ric Flair.
Sure. Yeah, I think
Dolph
he is.
Dolph Ziggler is awesome.
You know, and I really wanted Alberto Del Rio. That's who I wanted to win.
Yeah.
So, hey, you know, the guy I wanted won.
Yeah.
But the only other person that I would have liked to have seen, and I didn't think it was too likely because they're in the process of really building him up into an in-ring badass.
John Morrison.
And
he got a great, great response from the audience when he came out.
He did.
That was great to see.
He probably brought away the most memorable move of the night.
Completely.
I mean, when you talk about, you know, when people talk about what was the highlight aside from, you know, outcomes, like what was the biggest highlight inside the ring? I think
So the people who aren't familiar with wrestling, the Royal Rumble, wrestlers come into the ring every 90 seconds. The way you're eliminated is by being thrown over the top rope and both of your feet landing on the ground. John Morrison is standing on the outside of the ropes and gets knocked off the apron by William Regal, about ready to hit the ground when he lands on the guardrail.
The barrier. Over by the fans.
And his feet are maybe a foot off the ground, and he's holding his feet up, and then he brings himself up and catwalks along the barriers and then leaps onto the steps by the ring and gets back into the ring.
Yeah, really incredible.
I mean, and just no way that I could describe how amazing it was.
And on just, a personal proud moment,
yeah.
My friend Dan across the
I
the
taught
room
him how to lock up. That's wow. All I taught him. And then after he mastered that, then he moved on to the next trainer. No, but John went to UC Davis, studied acting. Was also, I mean, a gymnast and also a wrestler. He also wrestled, and he tried out for season 2 of Tough Enough, and he didn't make the cut. And so, but he still wanted to pursue his dream of wrestling. So he did some research. He looked for wrestling organizations and independent wrestling organizations in his area. Found Supreme Pro Wrestling, and said, "Hey, I want to start training with you guys." Started training. Amazing athlete. Just incredible shape. I'm like, this guy's going to surpass anything any of us are doing. And what was funny thing was, is like when you're training to be a wrestler, you know, you don't learn like 3 moves and then we give you your first match. It's gradually expose you to the audience. You know, you start up, you're doing ring crew. You're definitely doing ring crew sometimes for years. And then after that, then, okay, you're the guy who comes out when the wrestler takes off their jacket, you go get their jacket and then you take it to the back. Then when you start getting better, when you start understanding the complexities of a match and what it takes to put on a good match, then eventually you become a referee. And it's really important. It's more than just counting 1, 2, 3. You got to deliver messages. Sure. It's a hard job to be a really good referee. But what would be funny was when John was the referee, he was bigger than the 2 wrestlers and in a whole lot better shape. We were wrestling the show in Stockton, and all the women in the audience, when John came out, went nuts. And the women in the audience started the "ref is hot" chant.
That rules.
And they were chanting for the ref to take his shirt off. And here's these 2 wrestlers, you know, these kind of portly wrestlers in ill-fitting spandex, and all the women in the audience are chanting for John to take his shirt off. So eventually when he started wrestling, it was a huge deal. And we were about to start doing something with his character as a wrestler when he got the call from, I believe, Al Snow, that they were casting for Tough Enough 3 and they wanted him to do that. He moved on to Tough Enough 3 and won a contract with World Wrestling Entertainment. And
the rest is history.
Years later, you know, I always joked with him. You know, as he went on to Tough Enough 3, I joked with him and I said, I get an action figure. And he just kind of laughed. He's like, you got it. Because at the time, my house was just covered in action figures. And I always told him, I get an action figure. You know, I want, at the time, he was Johnny Onyx. And I was like, I want a Johnny Onyx action figure. And jokingly, but now you can go to any toy store and there's a John Morrison action figure sitting there. So I'm not buying one. I'm still waiting, you know. And he's nice enough that anytime they're in town, He contacts all of the wrestlers from SPW.
Awesome.
And is like, "Hey, I'd love to see you guys. I'd love to hang out with you guys afterwards." And they did a show, and he invited us over to sushi afterwards. And I brought Erin along with me, and she's like, "Are any of the other wrestlers going to be there?" I'm like, "I don't know. It might just be John and us." And no, there's Chris Jericho, there's Rey Mysterio, there's Edge, there's Natty Neidhart, there's at the time the other member of JTG's former tag partner.
Shad.
Yeah, Shad Gaspar. He was there. And pretty much all of those wrestlers were there just hanging out.
That's
and just
awesome.
Super friendly. You know, when Erin and I were leaving, we just thanked them for the show. It was like, "Thank you for entertaining us. You guys were awesome. Just thank you so much. Just have a safe," you know, things I'd want to hear when I was on the road.
Sure.
When I'm on the road, just like, "Thanks for the show. Have a safe trip. Please come back."
That's awesome.
And they were just super receptive and just like, "Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you." And just super nice. And I feel proud anytime.
That's awesome.
There's a little part. And just a tiny itty bit of what it took to get him to where he was.
Well,
but
the fact
a lot
is,
of us,
it took, you know, it was every step that took him, you know, and you were one of the steps along the way. I think you should be very proud of that.
No, I am. And, you know, and then everyone, all of the trainers at SPW, the ones who taught him so much more. And I think the thing that he learned most from SPW is respect, you know. Yep. And just because, you know, you can do the most push-ups and you can do the most flips, that doesn't mean that you don't show respect for the guy who's been there for years. And, you know, the guy who's doing the booking. And he had all the respect in the world. And, you know, we always joke with him and say, no, you know, when you come back, you still got a few months of ring crew. And you can still help out. And oddly enough, after he had won Tough Enough, he came back to hang out and talk to us. And as we're tearing down the ring, he was helping us load it back in. And it's just the kind of guy he is. He was a genuine person, and just down to earth. And
it's awesome.
It's like one of those guys that you're happy that good things are happening to him.
That's so right.
So he's a good guy.
Well, look at that. We are over time, over budget. This hour, again, has flown by. We gave people a lot of little personal insights.
And we really didn't talk about kittens too much, so maybe we'll talk about that more next time.
Just between us, we have 6 cats.
Yeah.
And a dog.
6 cats, and 5 of them have perfect vision. We'll talk about my cross-eyed snaggletooth special cat.
Okay. Everyone, we'd love to see our Facebook membership cross the 100 person threshold.
Yeah. As soon as we get buttons, anyone who we see post a, hey, follow our friends on Vowel Movements, maybe we'll send them a button or something.
I think that's a good idea.
You know, or either one of us are playing shows. I'll have a next secretion show. Once we get Vowel Movement buttons, I'll have a little 10 of those just sitting there.
That rules.
Grab one.
All right. So, you know, in another week or so, check back for a new episode. Hopefully you've
listened to the old ones too. There's
why not?
A couple.
They're
and listen
there.
To the, and where can they get the, if they go to the site, they can find the special supergroup episode that we did.
It's
for
on there
Rock
as well.
Show
yeah.
Radio.
You can go to bobby-j.net/vowelmovements.html. I know that's long, but you bear with us for a few more weeks.
And
here.
I believe there's a link on our Facebook page too.
Which is the easiest way to do it. If you just find Vowel Movements on Facebook, hit the link. It'll take you right there. You can go to vowelmovements.podomatic.com, and you'll find our page there as well.
All right. Yeah, listen to the supergroup show. I was really happy with that.
But thanks for everything. You guys have been great. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. Thanks for the feedback, the instant feedback tonight. It made it made for the show. So.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you guys very, very soon.
Working till my stress is gone, it's for you.
Yes, my dear, I finally realize
it's all for
you.
Yeah,
just
when you see me working
just
all the day,
it's just
working
you.
All of my stress
just for
away,
you.
It's for
yes,
you.
My dear, I finally realize
it's all
that
for,
just
you.
For you.
Just for
just
you.
For you.
Just for you. Now,
yes, my dear, I finally realize
that it's just for you.
Just for
when you see me working
just
all
for
your day,
it's just for
working
you.
All of my stress
just for you.
Way is for
yes,
you.
My dear,
I finally realize it's all
that
it's
for just
you.
For you.
When you see me spending all
just
of my
you.
Money,
it's just for
just
you.
To give you well,
just
how
you.
Money is for
yes,
you.
My dear.
Well, I finally realize
that
it's for
just
you.
For you.
It's for
just
you.
For you.
Nobody else.
Just for you.
My
it's just
love.
For you.
It's for
just
you.
For you.
Sweetheart.
Just for you.
Just for you.
Just for you.
It's just for you.
Just for you.
Just for you.
Hey, Dan, you know where I go when I need website work?
No.
I go to TedAngel.com. We're the best admin in the business.
We are.